This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Thanks much, as always, for listening to the show. Just after noon. Hour number three underway. There's a kid named Dexatrim somewhere who's listening going, I just got my first ever shout out on the radio.
Why is he mad at me, that guy?
Dexatrim. Pretty good. We'll get to your blitz in a second, covering a couple of the teams in town that you care about, including the return of the NBA last night. If you missed the action, two really good games decided by a bucket with three-pointers. They could have won the game at the horn. The Jazz beat the Pelicans 106-104 behind a double-double from Rudy Gobert, who got this whole shutdown started when he got coronavirus way back when on March 11th. And the Lakers topped the Clippers in the battle for L.A. in Orlando, 103-101. Anthony Davis pouring in 34. Let's get to the Beltway Blitz right now. Chase Hughes of NBC Sports Washington. So the Wizards play the Suns today at 4 p.m., what can you tell us about that game?
Well, I think if the Wizards have any hope of making the playoffs, then this is pretty much must win. They've got eight games, and since the NBA only took the top 22 teams, basically every team they're going to play is good, or at least in the playoff picture, but they start with the worst team they're going to play, and that is the Suns. And then the second game they play the Nets, who are almost as bad, and the only team that they can directly help their playoff chances against in the Eastern Conference, because the Brooklyn Nets are seventh. So I think you look at these first two games, the Wizards have to go at a minimum 1-1, probably need to go 2-0 in order to give themselves a chance for the playoffs. But other than that, I think more important than the wins and losses is just the development of their younger players like Rui Hachimura and Troy Brown Jr. And this is the first time we'll get to see them as the main primary scoring options in real NBA games.
So, Chase, you mentioned Rui and Troy Brown. Who's another person, without Davis Bertans and Bradley Beal, that's going to have their role increased dramatically, in your opinion? Those are the top two, I would say. You're going to run the offense through those guys at times. Who's somebody else that's going to have to do more? It's going to be asked to do more kind of in a showcase format.
Yeah, I think there's a few guys that are kind of in the same tier after them. But I would highlight Isak Bonga. He's looked pretty impressive so far through the exhibition games. And before those even started, throughout training camp, his teammates and coaches said that he'd been one of the guys that looked much improved coming back from quarantine, which is strange because he actually didn't have a basketball hoop to shoot on for months, but somehow he was able to improve. And I find him interesting because he's sort of a glue guy. He's not going to score 20, 25 points, but he always shows up well in the box score, kind of like Otto Porter used to do, where the plus minus and some of these advanced metrics just love him. And I think it's interesting because he doesn't have a guaranteed contract next year. And I think this will show them, is it legitimate? Is it a mirage, or can this guy actually be counted on as one of the pieces you're going to build forward with? And I honestly think this eight-game stretch will tell us a lot about his future. He's only 20. He's very raw. But I think the Wizards will learn a lot about him in these next few weeks.
Chase, I'd say more people listening right now than not didn't see any of the two games last night in the bubble. For those folks, what did you think of the telecast, the quality of play, the optics, and how it looked when they do check it out?
I think the NBA has a setup where you don't really notice the lack of the crowd, at least not as much as you do in Major League Baseball. There's no real wide shots of the crowd, and they have the sidelines covered by screens that actually have virtual fans on them. And when the cameras are focused in on the court, it kind of just looks like a game would at, you know, Staples Center or Madison Square Garden, where the crowd is in the dark. You know, they don't have the lights on in the stands at those stadiums. Kind of reminds me of the Battle of Atlantis, the college basketball tournament. I think it's a preseason tournament where it's really dark in the stands and you can't see the crowd at all. So the sport is just kind of living as it is. And I think one thing that has helped too is that the NBA is in this bubble, and they've sort of, I don't want to declare victory here, but they put the coronavirus behind them sort of with several rounds of entirely negative tests. So it's almost like the sport is now the primary focus. And I think it helps that they have this setup where the crowd is blacked out.
What did you make of the games last night, Chase? Not necessarily just in terms of presentation, but what did you see? Did it look rusty? Did it look right to you? Just and give me your impression of the four teams that played.
I thought it was maybe a little bit rusty. You know, the Clippers weren't full. They didn't have Lou Williams or Montrezl Harrell. Zion Williamson, everyone was wondering if he would play. He ended up playing, but not very many minutes. I think he was capped at like 18, 19 minutes. Didn't really play down the stretch. So there were definitely some signs that this was the first game back from a long layoff. But overall, both games were really competitive. They went down to the final minute. It was really interesting and ironic that Rudy Gobert scored the first points and the last points of the first game, considering all that was made about him being the guy who contracted coronavirus and the league subsequently shut down. So that was crazy. And then, you know, the second game, you got to see LeBron James make a clutch shot and then play some really good defense on both Kawhi Leonard and Paul George to secure the win. And, you know, going into this restart, I think the Lakers are the favorite. I think that the time off really benefited them, and they certainly got off to a good start. Both him and Anthony Davis looked great.
Chase Hughes of NBC Sports Washington on Grant and Danny. I want to real quick get a thought from you on the baseball team before we let you go as well, because I know you cover the Nats too. They've won two straight. They got a four-day layoff coming. How much do you anticipate that hindering them as they now don't get to play again until Tuesday?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder about the bats, because that's one, I think, silver lining despite the record and some of the losses they've had, is that some of these guys are hitting really well. Starlin Castro, Victor Robles, they were clearly very ready for the season to start. And, you know, Carter Kieboom, some of these younger guys that, you know, maybe aren't used to an all-star break and keeping staying sharp. Carter Kieboom, I've been really impressed with him. He's a rookie. He's, reached base six straight plate appearances. That's been impressive. So I feel like there may be a little bit of momentum there that the Nationals might lose offensively. And plus, you're taking a series away against the Miami Marlins that probably would have been an opportunity to collect some wins. So certainly there's a concern there, but I feel like as long as the Nationals can get going sometime soon, they'll be all right.
Chase, thank you, buddy. Always appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
You got it, dude. Let's actually talk some Nationals, please. How about Charlie Slows? Talks about the Nationals every night, calling their play-by-play. You can hear it right here on 106.7 The Fan. Charlie, looks like a couple good games in a row from this group that was starting a little sluggish here. Got to like what you've seen the last couple of nights against the Blue Jays.
Yeah, some really good at-bats. Starlin Castro had a slow start, and then he's banged some hits all over the ballpark. Asdrubal Cabrera's had some big hits for them and played terrifically in the field. And then Carter Kieboom, a couple of games in a row with some really long, deep at-bats, working some walks, getting some hits, and played very well in the field as well, playing third base and the right side of the infield when they shift has looked very, very good. So the bullpen has pitched pretty well. Obviously, they're now down Will Harris, who was placed on the injured list with a groin strain. His two appearances have not been effective, so certainly seems to be a reason why. And Tanner Rainey's moved up with Sean Doolittle working on mechanics to try and regain his form, and he's pitched very well.
Yeah, go into that a little deeper, because you mentioned the bullpen and the Harris injury. I mean, he and Doolittle were supposed to have been maybe two-thirds of the back of the bullpen. So, yeah, I like the results so far, and Rainey's been great. But if those two guys over this 60-game sprint aren't what we thought, then you're pretty thin there all of a sudden.
Right. Then you're relying on other people to step up, as was the case yesterday with Eric Fetty not getting very far into the game. So other people have to step up into those roles when you were counting on Doolittle and Harris to be the guys, with Hudson at the back end, and Hudson has looked fine. But, you know, some of these things to be expected when you have the long layoff and guys try and ramp up. Other guys take – some guys take longer than others. And you had to figure there'd be some, you know, bumps and bruises and soreness and muscle strains just trying to ramp this up so quickly, especially for the pitchers. Because when you look around what's happened in the first week of this season, the injuries have been to pitchers more than anybody else all across baseball.
Charlie, you mentioned Starlin Castro. If the Nats are right about Castro, that's a great find. If they're not right, you're gonna, you know, you just can't replace Anthony Rendon. They don't make many of those guys, obviously. That's why he earned so much darn money in the offseason to the Angels. But if they're right about Castro, you can replicate some of that offense with some really good at-bats. This is a great find, and I think this offense will be okay. What would you bet on in terms of Starlin Castro's production? The guy that was so good for the second half of the Marlins last year, or the guy that's been more along the lines of what he's been in his career?
Well, you know, he's a free swinger. He doesn't walk very much. He puts the bat on the ball. He doesn't strike out a lot. He has had a propensity in other years to hit into a lot of double plays. You know, Davey knows him very well. I think, you know, when you're trying to make up for the loss of Rendon, there isn't one guy that's going to do that. So you're hoping you get contributions from him. You're hoping you're getting contributions from Keyboom, and Asdrubal Cabrera playing enough to fit in. And with the DH, you're getting more offense that way. And that's missed Howie Kendrick the past couple of days with some back tightness. Again, there you have guys trying to get ready, especially when he was shut down and couldn't participate in the summer camp until, you know, just a day or so before they're ready to start the season. So, you know, and you're missing Juan Soto right now. So, I think the offense has to come from a lot of different people to make up for a guy like Anthony Rendon. Very difficult to do with just one player, trying to find that one player. Maybe down the road, Carter Kieboom can provide that big-time offense. But I think what they tried to do was have enough people that could contribute to a lineup to spread it out and try and make up that difference.
Charlie, has DC decided with Juan Soto or whatever other national test positive next that they'll be treated just like any other citizen who's not being tested regularly? Or, I mean, have they decided it needs to pass 100 tests for COVID? What does he have to do to play?
I don't know. And I don't know if anyone knows, because, you know, what we heard is that he was cleared by Major League Baseball earlier in the week, and that it would be several more days before he's cleared by the Washington, D.C. Department of Health. And so we were told that would be August the 1st, which will be over this weekend. So the Nationals will have some intra-squad games to get him a lot of at-bats, try and get him ramped up again. Hopefully, you know, he doesn't run into any physical issues trying to do that so quickly. There's nothing that's ordinary about what anybody is doing. I mean, you've seen the news about the Cardinals and the Brewers, with the Cardinals having two positives, and now they're going to try and play on Saturday and then play doubleheader on Sunday, and those will be seven-inning games now as they try and, you know, limit the exposure at the ballpark and take the strain off pitching staffs. I mean, we're in about the most uncharted territory that baseball or really sports or anybody's ever been in.
Charlie, thank you, buddy. Always appreciate it, man. Enjoy your unexpected weekend off.
Yeah, kind of mini all-star break, a week into the season.
Gotta love it. Charlie Slows on G&D here on 106.7 The Fan. Hopefully the good guys can keep their winning streak going after the four-day hiatus. Lots still to get to today, though, including the return of hockey with the Caps getting back to action start of next week. And tomorrow, a full slate of games. The NBA has returned as well. And there's another team dealing with positive tests in Major League Baseball. You're listening to The Fan. We've been wondering who's going to be calling NFL games on Monday Night Football this year. They were redoing that booth, remember? We'd spent a few days talking about different candidates and people that could be in the booth. Well, one of the teams that we brought up and discussed was Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit, who are their tremendous play-by-play and color commentators for college football on ABC. And it looks like ESPN, according to a report, are going to use their primetime college football pairing of Fowler and Herbstreit on Monday Night Football, according to James Miller, an author who is breaking this story. So We'll see if it comes down the pike. Pro Football Talk just wrote a story about this as well. But it looks like the NFL games that we've been waiting to see, needing a voice for Monday Night Football now, are going to be called by a longtime college tandem. You think of Kirk Herbstreit, you think college football. You think Chris Fowler, you think host of the Heisman event. You know, calling games on ABC of Ohio State and Michigan, or you know, you get a big nighttime game between Clemson and Miami or something like that in the ACC. Those guys making the leap to the NFL, they're already great chemistry, great rapport. If you can call college football, I don't know why you couldn't call NFL football. I think that'll be really well received.
They're the best they've got. And if that's what that's about, then well done. It's going to be a little odd hearing Kirk Herbstreit, you know, break it down without talking about a team running. Well, I guess it depends on the team. But for the most part, you know, hey, they're not running this spread with five wide receivers. And, you know, this isn't him not talking about Alabama or Penn State or whatever kind of marquee thing. It's going to be a bit jarring at first, but I bet you it takes me a quarter before I fully get used to it. I mean, if the point is this showcase, this Monday Night Football thing needs to get some of the cachet back. I don't know that it ever will, to be honest with you, because of the matchups and a lot of logistics have gone into it. And Sunday Night Football, frankly, supersedes it for a million reasons. But if this is important, then you use your most important people, your best asset, and that's those two guys.
Yeah, I just am surprised that they're not going to bring in a former NFL star with some star power. But they put a lot of eggs in the Peyton Manning basket, and that basket crumbled around them. They want Peyton Manning. He just won't take their money at this point. And he's got other options. I mean, he could be an offensive coordinator. He could be a head coach at some point in the NFL years from now. He could be a team president. He could be a GM. Eventually, he'll be a John Elway type. I'm sure of that. But if he wants to just make $15 million to go sit in the booth and call football games, he could do that. And they want him. But he just won't accept their offers at this point. So where do you pivot? I think Drew Brees, who's got his deal with NBC, was of interest to them maybe if he was going to retire. That obviously didn't happen. He's still in New Orleans to quarterback the Saints. So that's a level where you need to make a splash hire. You need to bring in a massive name if you're going to do it. They've gone the other way with Booger McFarlane and with as a play-by-play standpoint, Joe Tessitore or McDonough, and they know now, okay, it's got to be a huge name. So if they can't go that route, they're saying, well, what's our best broadcast?
Yeah,
and our best broadcast is those two guys. But it's just odd. It's ESPN. It's Monday Night Football. It's one of the biggest shows we got in this sport, and it seems like it's just become so low down the list now that they struggle to attract those type of John Gruden types to be their commentators.
It's just the games. This is one of those things where it's very overwrought and everybody's thinking very hard about it. Now, again, we can talk about the decision, and we are. I like the decision. It's correct. It's good. I'm all in favor of it. I think that's a good pairing. But here's the thing. If the game is bad, less people will watch it. If it's a good game, if it's got two winning teams, if you can somehow negotiate the same treatment that NBC got, where they can handpick the best matchup starting in whatever week it is to get the best game of the week on Sunday night, Monday Night Football can't compete with that. It can't, where it's like every team takes a turn. Raiders, Cardinals, Monday night. Nope, it's going to stink. Maybe that's not a great example because John Gruden's fun. But you know what I'm trying to say? Like, if you get a couple bad, unentertaining teams, it's going to suffer the same fate as Thursday Night Football, where people will tune in for fantasy implications or if they're a fan of that team. But otherwise, you know, when the artist formerly known as the Redskins played on Monday Night Football, the national audience was going to suffer because they're dreadful. You can't compete with that.
No, absolutely not. So here's the question then. Is this a short-term fix for ESPN, do you think? Or do you believe this is their team now, where 5 years from now we've still got Fowler and Herbie calling Monday Night Football? Because for the record, I think they're going to do really well. And if that's the case, I'm perfectly fine with it. My sense would be, and this is my speculation, that ESPN is kind of putting them in that role as duct tape because they know they'll do a really good job. It'll be a good, clean, smooth, solid broadcast. And then they'll circle back to this as soon as they can make that splash hire that they really, really want. What do you think the end game is? Do you think that there's a chance that this is the Monday Night Football squad? And if it is, does it water it down at all to have them call in the college game the night before? No, I don't happen – or two nights before, I guess, on Saturday
night.
I don't happen to think so. You do Saturday night, best college football game. You fly on Sunday wherever you're going. by Monday morning, you're setting up in your hotel and you're ready to go. And on Monday night, you're back on the call. Pretty neat for Herbie and for Fowler, because you're now the guys in football.
Guys.
You get the best game in college and basically the best game in the NFL. And anyone who's watching primetime games and either levels watching you this year, we might not have to worry in either sport, but I don't even know that there's going to be fall college football. Might be fall NFL football. We're certainly hoping. But how do you see this playing out long term? Do you think this is duct tape, or do you think this is a plan for several years?
So my answer is going to annoy you. I think it's both, and here's what I mean. This is the plan as of right now, the same way that Tessitore, Booger McFarland, and Jason Witten was the plan, the same way then that Tessitore and Booger was the plan. I think this is the plan. I think the ratings aren't going to be very good because it's all about the games, and until they can find a way to get one of the three best games of the weekend and move, you know, 1 o'clock games to Monday Night Football, which they just can't, by the way, because the way the schedule works, they're not going to be able to compete with NBC, and they're pulling their hair out, rearranging deck chairs, basically, is the way that I view this thing. So they're going to go with this, and then they'll come up with the decision that, you know what, these guys were actually better served, and our college football emphasis is where we need to put them, and they'll try something else. I just don't think – I think they've got a rating ceiling until they can get out of this bubble that they're in and negotiate the way the NBC did.
800-636-1067 if you guys want to contribute here to this discussion. If they can't get Peyton Manning, which it seems like is the guy they want, you know, let's say Brady retires after this year. I could easily see them paying him $20 million or something crazy a year, and he slides right in, and then you kind of blow up the booth and you build it around Brady. Is there anyone else I'm missing? Because Breeze, even after he steps away, is going to NBC. Rodgers seems to want to play for a few more years. I'm just trying to think of the really good quarterbacks that generally are the big-name stars in sports. Who would be that guy? Romo was flirting with ESPN, locked up by CBS. Peyton Manning doesn't seem to want to do it for whatever reason. We don't know that Brady's going to step away. Is there someone that they could lure away? Maybe it's someone at another network who's a huge star or a name. I mean, you don't just create your own Dick Vitale overnight. It takes years and years. Is there somebody else in that mix?
Not at the top of my head. I mean, the guys that they've done for, as you touched on, for college hoops, have been, it's taken forever for Jay Billis to become Jay Billis. You know, It took a decade for Vitale yelling, "Diaper Dandy," for people to finally go, okay, this is tolerable. You know, I just don't know. I don't know who's on deck at this point in terms of a marquee NFL name. They've got a lot of people.
Do you agree with me?
It's
probably going to be one of those QBs, like a Phil Rivers.
They're hoping
is a guy that I would think of, or Tom Brady. Definitely, he doesn't have a huge personality, but just because he's Tom Brady, it would work. Because they're just waiting for Peyton. It seems like, and every single year, he's like, no thanks, I'm good. And I don't know what's going to change that. I mean, there's a better chance to me that he's running an NFL team in 2 years than he's in the Monday Night Football booth.
Yeah. You've either got to, again, they're going to try to do another star turn. And I keep saying the same thing over and over. It's just less about, I don't think people care, I guess, is the way I'm putting it. Have you ever watched a game? Well, you may be different because you and I are crazy people that watch stuff. But if a regular fan, have you ever gone, I'm going to watch this game because Jim Nantz and Tony Romo are doing it? You watch the game because you care about the game.
True.
You know what I mean? Like,
but
I don't know that
there
this
are
is the case anymore.
There are people when watching a game who get annoyed by the broadcasters and watch less of it if they care less about the actual game itself. And they're just watching TV for entertainment's sake. If the game's not particularly interesting specifically, broadcasters have to get better when the game gets worse. I was reading a poll in The Athletic about the 30 broadcast teams in baseball. They ranked Charlie and Dave on The Fan number 5 in all of baseball, which was awesome to see. And one of the things that one of the people said was, when the game gets worse, those guys gets better. And that has to happen. So if you get that out of Nantz and Romo, not every game is going to be awesome. You might watch a game in the fourth quarter because it's a one-possession tilt. But you might also have a 30-3 game that's completely boring and terrible, and those guys now have to keep you company and entertain you, and you have to not hate them, or else you're turning it off.
No,
so it is something to consider. For sure. I got a text that I want to bring up to you in a minute about why a network might be doing this. I mean, could this also just be a cost-cutting idea? Could this be something during this pandemic where you go, you know what, these guys are on the payroll. Yeah, we have to pay them more, I'm sure, but we're not hiring an analyst at $10 million for this COVID-19 season. So let's do this for this season and get by and reassess a year from now. something we can get into as we continue on G&D. Also, want to take a good hard look at the teams that have a chance to win championships in basketball, restarted yesterday, and the NHL that gets going again tomorrow with an all-day tournament-style gameplay starting in the afternoon, going deep into the evening. You're listening to The Fan. I'm Grant. He's Danny. You are listening to 106.7 The Fan. Monday Night Football booth sounds like it's going to consist of Fowler and Herbstreit, the tandem that does college football brilliantly on the network now. ABC primetime games on Saturday night. Of course, Herbstreit travels like crazy. I mean, imagine this dude's weekends, by the way. He does the Saturday morning show, which is the best sports show on television as far as any kind of panel pregame, college game day. And that oftentimes is not necessarily at the same site of the game he's doing that night. So he might be at, just as an example, first thing in the morning on Saturday, James Madison University or Texas Tech. And then the game that night might be at Notre Dame. Or it might be at, let's just use one of the big boys, Alabama. And so he's flying and going from the morning to that night's game on the plane to go call that game. Then he'll get back on a bird, I guess, either that night or probably first thing Sunday morning. Maybe they'll charter him on private jet so he can watch the NFL games. And then he will land on Sunday afternoon somewhere and get ready for Monday Night Football. Crazy amount of travel. Fowler's doing the same thing. I mean, he's hosting that show, so he's on that plane with Herbstreit when they're going to those games. So they're going to get to know each other even better than they already do at this point. I like the idea, but how about this as a suggestion? Also possibly a money-saving tactic to use guys you already have during a health and economic crisis. Not the year to go blow $10 million a year on a star when you don't even know for sure there's going to be a full season. So if you brought in, and I'm just going to throw out a random name, but let's just say you played Rex Ryan, a $10 million contract last week to be the new face of Monday Night Football because he's a big, goofy personality and he might attract some eyeballs and say some crazy stuff. If there's no season, theoretically, you're still paying that guy whatever you just locked him into, and now you're finding ways to best use him other than your, you know, early morning weird pregame show that they do on ESPN. So this could just be a, let's use these guys for this year. We'll see what happens with college. We'll see what happens with the NFL. And at the end of this year, we'll revisit. Although if I'm Fowler and Herbstreit, I'm not signing off on any kind of one-year contract to do anything right now. You want me to call games for you? It's going to be a couple of years, because if the only year is this pandemic where I might be calling games from Connecticut anyway, you're not setting me up to thrive as it is.
So what's cheaper? A raise for a couple of guys or two new, or maybe one, depends on who you got, but new employees, as you said, with full salary, benefits, bonuses, and whatever else, right, that might go into a contract like that. I think it's a sharp point. I really do. And here's the thing. You could run this amazing search and, you know, try to lure Mike Tirico back, or, you know, get Bob Costas to lecture us at halftime, whatever you want to do. But you've already got two good options, probably the best options available to you internally already, and it's going to be at a fraction of the cost. That's a win-win-win-win-win all around the board. But it is a good point about, you know, sort of the climate that we're in, right?
Yes, it is. I'm a little bit surprised that they wouldn't look at their own roster and just pay one of those guys to do it. Or do this move, the Fowler and Herbstreit thing, where just as an example, like Randy Moss or somebody like that, right, over the years. Randy Moss wouldn't have been interesting in that booth. What about this name? I got a tweet about this, and I'm thinking about this, just kicking it around. Somebody said, what about Alex Smith? Now, he obviously wants to play football. He's coming back with Washington. He's trying to get on the practice field at training camp. But let's say this time next year he's retired. My question is he a big enough name nationally to draw the type of eyeballs, attention? Does he have the Q rating necessary to be the next 10-year voice of Monday Night Football next to a play-by-play guy putting balls on a tee? He's not John Gruden. I understand that. He's not Peyton Manning. If he's really good, though, he was the number one overall pick. He's been in the NFL for well over a decade. He's played in San Francisco, major market. He's played in Kansas City, massive fan base. He's been here in Washington. He's been to three Pro Bowls. If Smith is good, and I've never heard him in that role, I don't know that he is, but I know he's a great interview. He's a really smart guy, a good talker, knows the game brilliantly. if he's good at that, could he be kind of like your plug-and-play Tony Romo where he steps away after this season and they say, here's the money, you're working with fill-in-the-blank play-by-play guy, go have fun?
Wouldn't have the same cachet as Romo because he didn't have the misfortune of playing for the Dallas Cowboys, right? But basically, you do that, you graduate, you get yourself a gig, right? Unless you transcend it or Peyton Manning or Brady or something else. But here's what I keep coming back to, what I think should be focused on. The idea that a celebrity cachet superstar guy has to be the one to do it is kind of the old vestige of the Monday Night Football booth with Howard Cosell, Dandy Don Meredith, and they've been chasing that ghost for a really long time. And to me, the focus should be less on, is this guy cool enough to draw casual eyeballs? Because I think that's diminishing return. To me, this should be about who's the best. If Alex Smith is great at it, then you pay what it costs. You give him the millions of dollars to go do it. And I bet you, by the way, he'd be sensational as an analyst, broadcaster, et cetera, with just sort of the way that guy carries a room and studies and prepares and delivers things. I bet you he'd be really, really good on the telecast. But if you're looking for a Dennis Miller kind of gimmick or some kind of famous person, I just think it's doomed to fail in this day and age. I think times have changed, and people just want to not make fun of Booger McFarland for saying they should take a knee here on fourth down. You know what I mean?
Times have changed is a great point, and it needs to be said. We're probably also just in an era that's so different now where you may not have another Gruden like you did. Maybe either they don't spend that kind of money. I don't think that'll be an issue for ESPN. It will for some networks. But there is something to be said, too. You think of Monday Night Football, there's this romanticism to that booth, but it used to be the only show in town. Now, if you're actually thinking about booths, NBC's is ahead of Monday Night Football's, and it's not close. Al Michaels, Chris Collinsworth might be the preeminent booth in the game right now. CBS with Tony Romo alongside Jim Nantz is a better booth than Monday Night Football, and it's kind of viewed as more of a marquee matchup. The CBS 4:30 game is going to be a bigger deal a lot of weeks than Monday Night Football. I would even throw Fox. I know people love to beat up on Joe Buck, but Buck and Aikman, they get that 4 o'clock matchup in the NFC, the best game in the conference that day that they get to choose every single Sunday. And a lot of times that's Dallas versus Green Bay, or it might be an NFC East tilt, or you got the Vikings and the Packers battling for the NFC North title. That booth has moved ahead of, and in the pecking order of where you're choosing games and what happens at the end of the season when there's important games. Fox, CBS, they're choosing before ESPN's Monday Night Football in some cases. So I wonder, Danny, if we're just past the point where that booth ever has to or can be again what it was, where we're trying to find a way to get it back to what we grew up with, and maybe those times are just behind us.
That's what I think. I mean, you know my view on this thing. I think you're I'm not saying you, but I think ESPN or whoever's got Monday Night Football next, if they relinquish it, is chasing a ghost when you try to do – you know, the man, the myth, the legend, a Howard Cosell bit and, a celebrity or a rock star, a caricature, a guy in a cowboy hat, whatever it is, as they've tried to do with, you know, with Kornheiser and Dennis Miller and all these other guys. It's foolish. I just don't think the country as a sports viewership entity is there anymore. I don't think it is. I think people care about their fantasy teams. They care about their teams. They care about divisional standings. And they like the sport. They want to play DFS. Do a good telecast. And the rest takes care of itself.
He's Danny and I'm Grant. You are listening to The Fan. You can tweet us at Grant H. Paulson for me and at Funny Danny for him. The Cardinals have a couple of positive tests. When are they going to be able to play again? And is this the new policy in baseball? You have a positive test, your team gets shut down for several days. If that is the case, how on earth are they going to finish this season? We're G&D. Comes after the outbreak within the Miami Marlins, who have had 20 positive tests, 18 by players. And remember, they played a game when several guys already had coronavirus and hadn't yet tested positive for it. So baseball, I guess, learned from that experience. The postponed game has been rescheduled as part of a doubleheader on Sunday. So the plan, I guess, with the Cardinals right now, Danny, they don't get to play today. If their tests come back negative, other than those two players, then they are going to allow them to play tomorrow and then the doubleheader on Sunday. But that goes completely opposite with what's going on with the Phillies, who have not played since the weekend despite not having a single player test positive after they were interacting with the Marlins on the field. They still have not played an inning since then. And then the Marlins themselves, obviously, I mean, instead of pulling up from their minor league operation and their 60-player pool that they have, who knows when they're going to play again at this point with their 18 positive tests within the organization. So it brings up the question, do we have our answer now on the protocol for positive tests where you get shut down indefinitely? If the Cardinals just play tomorrow, we still don't have that answer, because what's different between them? They actually did have two positive tests, and the Phillies, who have not had any.
Just those two positive tests, right? You see, I mean, again, how it happens matters a lot to me, right? If the, I don't know. I talk out of both sides of my life. If I had more than both sides, I have like seven sides. I talk out of every side when dealing with this issue here. But if the worry is transmission from team to team, you haven't had that happen yet, it seems like, right? It seems like the Philly organizational positive test had no correlation with the fact that there was a spreader event among the Marlins clubhouse. If the worry is the Cardinals now, a couple who have tested positive, and I saw one report that they believe it's two pitchers somehow. So these two pitchers who are not going to hit is going to spread it to another team, or they're going to spread it within the Cardinals. You could stop them from spreading it within the Cardinals, presumably by shutting the Cardinals down for a couple days, keeping those guys separate, making the remaining players go through a couple negative tests, and not doing what Major League Baseball did, sending the Marlins out to play when several guys had it, right? So let's delay the Cardinals a couple days, not have them play, just to get a couple negative tests and follow a couple guidelines. No problem there. We'll just delay a few days and we'll have a doubleheader next week, or I don't know, whatever you'll have. But what's happening instead is, well, you saw the Marlins. It doesn't matter. Nothing else matters. If you saw the Marlins, if you were in the same building as the Marlins, an open-air environment, not in the clubhouse with them, but you saw them, you don't get to play for a while. Which to me is, it's erring on the side of caution, but I'm a little bit confused as to the protocol. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, to your point, so the Cardinals, let's separate them for a second. So they have the two positive tests, and I would imagine why they are postponing the game tonight, because of what you said is, you know, the fear after the Marlins outbreak. So you're just making sure you took tests this morning. The two tests you got back today were from yesterday. So after taking tests today, if there are, say, three positives, another one, maybe they postpone the game again because it's spreading. Or if there are five positives and there are three new guys on that club that have it, then you don't play. I understand that. But if two straight days you get everyone else being negative and it's just these two players, then we're back to the Nats with Juan Soto. You take those two guys, you pull them to the side, and they keep playing. So I come back to the Phillies. The Phillies every single day have tested since they played the Marlins, and not one time has anybody on that team tested positive. But they haven't been allowed to play baseball. So I think what they're doing with the Marlins makes sense. I think what they're doing with the Cardinals probably makes sense. But those things can't make sense, and what they're doing with the Phillies also be practical. Right. Because they're handling the two situations differently. So either they should handle them all like they are, the Phillies, or they should handle them all like they are, the Marlins and the Cardinals. But in one of those cases, there's a team with no positive tests, with no positive cases. And they're still not getting
That's
to play
it.
Baseball.
That's it. So the Marlins, shut those dudes down right now. Yep, you got me. No problem there. Cardinals, let's delay a couple days, right? Because you got a couple positive tests. We know that they flew. And the mistake that was made with the Marlins is you had a guy that we think is positive or whatever, and you were just allowed to go and play the very next day after you got the positive test for this one dude, knowing that he was around everybody for days on end. You're preventing that with the Cardinals. Give them a couple of days. Let them hopefully, knock on wood, test negative a bunch of times. And then can't we just pick up business? Can't we start back? What am I missing on that part? For the Philly part of this thing, I'm baffled as to the chain of events. Is it because the Marlins were in their city? So now, you know what I mean? Like, you got to shut them down too? For the Cardinals, we should wait a couple
days. How many
days
do you think a team like the Cardinals should be shut down? Because my philosophy is...
Two.
See, and I'm going to say one. I'm going to say you don't play today after the tests yesterday until I get the results back tomorrow. Because if there are no more positive tests, I understand. People will email me or tweet me or call or whatever, and they'll say, you're dumb. It could take 3 or 4 days to get this. I know that. That's what the Phillies are waiting for still, theoretically. They haven't gotten any tests back, luckily. But today, five guys could have tested positive. Are they supposed to never play again? Do they just their season's over now? Or they're done for 2 weeks? I don't think you can just sit around for 10 days like DC's doing with Juan Soto with an entire baseball team and still have a season. So if you can't do it, then we all just need to go home and go our separate ways, I guess. But if baseball's actually trying to pull this off, then to me, the Cardinals don't get to play today. And if there are no positive new tests tomorrow, then those two guys are separated. You cross your fingers, and they play tomorrow afternoon. That's how I would do it. Now, I'm sure everyone will tell me I'm an idiot, but that's what I would do if I'm Grant Manfred.
I'm echoing everything you're saying, and now it's Danny Manfred time. I'm going to go, hey, there are false positives and false negatives. False positives, according to depends on the scientific journal you read, but my good doctor friend told me 30% of tests, which seems to be a huge number, in your worst-case scenarios, could be false positives. Little less than 20% could be false negatives. That's why I'm just going to double. I'm going to take two tests because then your margin of error is dramatically reduced exponentially when you take a second test. Does that make sense?
Here's you don't combine the percentages. Here's the difference between my plan and your plan, though. If you do it your way, you can't make up those games now.
I understand that.
In other words, that's my concern. Because if you're the Cardinals, you're supposed to play today and tomorrow, and you bang Friday and Saturday. Let's play. Say you play a doubleheader Sunday. There's still a game you didn't make up. You lost a game.
Yes. I'm going to sacrifice maybe something to make sure I don't have a Marlins situation where now I've shut down two teams for a week. Your point is right. I have no comeback for that. Only then I'm basically going to say I'm going to cut my losses here, meaning I might lose a game or two, or something's going to be really quirky on the back end. But the difference, again, is if let's say the Cardinals were at home for this. And again, all these permutations are so fascinating. Let's say the Cardinals weren't home and they weren't traveling together. The reason you have to make sure with the Cardinals is because these two guys were on the team playing with everybody, right? Everybody was there with them. If this had just been they came from their house and whoopsie doozy, your thermometer reads that you're too hot and you've got it and you never contacted anybody, they'd be playing today, presumably, right? But because we have an event where we know now they had it and they were with everybody else, now we got to wait and see. Then that's why I'm gonna kind of triple stamp a double stamp here and dot my I's, cross my T's with a second round of tests, which may delay things too long and be uncomfortable. But again, I'm trying to avoid a Marlin situation. My Marlin situation needs to be my worst case, because if there's a worse case than that, goodbye. No baseball.
Grant and Danny on the fan. So let's do this. I want to open up the phones next on this. I think this is interesting. 800-636-1067. And maybe your point is there shouldn't be playing at all, and you can call in and say that, I guess, if you'd like. But in this case with the Cardinals or with the Phillies or the Marlins, when a team has a positive test or two, it is becoming the precedent now that they get shut down for at least a few days. How would you handle that? What would be your rule if you're the commissioner? And let's just use this Cardinals example with two guys testing positive on yesterday's test. When should they be able to play again? How many days until they can start playing? 800-636-1067 is the number on TV.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.